I was cuddling the dog. Molly was cuddling Trisket. We were all sitting together on the floor in very close. We had a mammal pile.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
There's a new actor playing Doctor Who, and this week on Geeks Without God, we're going to talk about how Jodie Whittaker is doing in the role after just a couple of episodes with guest Bob Alberti.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Nick Glover.
Woo-wee-oo.
Aha! He has given us a hint as to the topic of today's podcast, as if the introduction that you may or may not have listened to, or perhaps the title of the episode, would not have told you. We have brought with us a guest. Bob Alberti returns to our podcast. Hello, Bob.
No more Janus Thorns.
Okay. So we are here to talk about Doctor Who. Specifically, we have Jodie Whittaker debuting.
Yeah.
Yay.
As the Doctor in season 11. So we're going to focus kind of on that.
Mrs. the Doctor.
The idea of them actually casting a woman as the Doctor. And how's that working out? So far, Bob and I have seen the first two episodes of this series. Indeed. That's all that has aired at the point we were recording this episode. Molly and Nick have seen the first episode of the series. So why don't we just start with, rather than review of anything that is involved in the series, where we all are in terms of our Doctor Who viewing of late. And I think we're all kind of in the same place or very similar to it. I got about, I don't know, maybe a third of the way into the first Capaldi season. Yeah. And I was digging Capaldi. And honestly, I heard a lot of people complaining about the scripts. I thought they were, you know, they were Doctor Who scripts. I didn't really care.
You're not there for the quality writing?
Yeah, but not really. I mean, some of them are great.
Yeah.
But most of them are, you know, Doctor Who.
Right.
It was more that I had, like, a friend that would come over and bring me the new episodes, and that stopped happening, so I stopped watching.
Got it.
So I pretty much did not see almost any of the Capaldi run. And my understanding is the last year of Capaldi was actually pretty good.
We watched, I'm just looking at, we watched through, I believe we got to Mummy on the Orient Express when we gave up. I think that was which was episode 8 of the first series, which was with Capaldi, which is technically series 8 of the revival.
I seem to remember turning it off in the middle of an episode where Capaldi busted out a guitar, and we were like, nah, all right. And then,
that's
like,
interesting.
That's
when I gave up on The Land of the Lost when I was a kid.
Is when they pulled out a guitar?
Suddenly they pulled a guitar out and started singing, and I was just like, I'm done.
I mean, I suppose you could build a guitar. They had trees in prehistoric.
I'm not saying the Doctor couldn't play a guitar. The Doctor could play.
No, I'm talking about Land of the Lost.
he just pulled that out of his ass.
Oh, okay.
It's made out of coconuts, Gilligan's Island style.
I wish. I'd have bought that, but no.
So I think the point is that all kind of lost.
It jumped the shark for us in various ways. For me, it was Clara.
I hated Clara.
I was done with Clara, and if somebody had told me, you know, it's Clara free now, I might have been able to come back to it, but it didn't.
She wasn't a character so much as a plot device.
Yeah.
If she had the manic pixie dream companion, it just didn't. Yeah, it Nick, didn't count.
I just looked it up, and I remember what happened with the guitar. So we stopped after Mummy on the Orient Express in Series 8. And then when Series 9 came out, we were like, all right, we'll watch the first episode and see how it is. And that's when he entered on a tank playing guitar.
That's what it was.
And we were like, nope. And just and we were like, nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No thanks.
Yep.
Yeah, Clara was it was a very frustrating way to end the 11th Doctor.
Yep.
And then continuing into Capaldi, I just found her to be Like, she was just, the impossible girl is such a fucking, like, she's everything and yet somehow nothing.
That's, yeah. When a character is all the substance, she has no substance.
When I was okay with the concept that she was supposed to be somehow time-bound to the Doctor to appear over and over again in his life, and then we reached the kind of the apotheosis of that storyline, and then she didn't go away.
Yeah.
Like, just kind of hung around.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, she was the souffle girl, and then she was all this stuff that was right. kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then she was just fucking there.
Right. And then she was just, and then her husband or boyfriend just died off stage. And
yeah. Oh, that's right.
I kept waiting for that to not be lame. And they did nothing with it. It was just like, nope, he's dead. I'm like, time
which frees
right
her up to have a relationship
right?
with the Doctor. I just, everyone's favorite thing.
Yeah, that ugh. Just didn't work for me at all.
I feel like, and maybe I'm alone in this, but when the companion is also a romantic interest for the Doctor,
yeah.
it feels like one of those skeety situations where, like, a boss is dating their employee, and it's like,
yep.
Yeah.
It makes me, like...
I think that
ethically worked.
I think the thing is that with Rose it was new. I mean, they didn't do that in the original series. There was never they imply it.
Okay.
When they bring Sarah back, she talks about having sort of a romantic interest in the Doctor, but they never really showed it.
Right.
If you go back and watch Third Doctor episodes, it's like if it's there, it's super subtextual.
Right.
Where with Rose, it was different. And right. I actually, having been a fan of the old series, didn't mind it because it was a different kind of relationship.
With Rose, it was all right. And it was a different Doctor, you know. So, yeah, to then have it be Clara is the one that both Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi somehow have a weird thing for that felt half paternal. You know, that was the other weird part of it.
Especially when you got Peter Capaldi.
Right. It felt very much like she was like, oh, I know you're old now, but I still see the young guy. And, like, I still feel the young guy feelings, which was weird. And,
see, and as an old guy, I knew that was BS right there.
He's only, like, 20 years her senior.
Yeah.
You understand from a writer's standpoint... You're writing the Doctor,
mm-hmm.
and the Doctor is not the age that the actor appears.
No,
the Doctor is just
he's a new age guy, Tim. He doesn't see age.
He's super old, right?
Right.
Super
right.
Yeah. He's also not even a he, and that's
right.
kind of where the Jodie Whittaker thing we'll get into in a minute. The
Doctor's sometimes a he. He's not the Doctor. Isn't genderless.
Mm-mm.
The Doctor is female right now.
Yeah.
She's the Doctor.
Because she's even says, like, in that episode, she's
before.
Like, she's
Ooh.
Like, I was just a Scottish man.
Wait,
she even
minute.
Says
wait
that.
Minute, guys, wait a minute. We can't talk about the Doctor anymore. That's her dead name.
No, it's not. That's not the same at all.
Because that was his identity then.
I know.
Or that was her identity
That's
then?
Still her identity. She's a regeneration.
She's still the Doctor.
Yeah.
She says she's the Doctor. She calls herself the Doctor.
They've made it very clear that each regeneration is a distinct character.
Yeah.
That is the same person, but it is a different character.
Has the same memories, but different character.
Well,
some like fish and custard, others.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's times where they show all, there was that, I don't remember which episode it was, where they showed all of the different doctors sort of like coming through in a way to like, it was the one where Matt Smith is screaming at that entity about what he is and like what he'll do, and
he's standing in stone.
And he's like, don't you know who the fuck I am? Like I am the Doctor.
That was
Doctor
Smith.
Motherfucker.
Yeah,
that was the best Matt Smith moment.
I really liked Matt Smith. He really grew on me.
So we all kind of lost it with Capaldi, but you know they
lost it with Moffat.
Yeah, I was going to say,
right.
I really like the Doctor, and Moffat managed to persuade me not to watch the show.
Now we've got a new showrunner, and we've got a new Doctor, and for the first time, the Doctor is being played by a woman.
And I like her, and here's something that I find that I hope they do. The Doctor, historically, has been male-presenting, has been a man, and has been attracted to women. I hope this doctor is also attracted to women. If she is going to have a companion relationship, it will bother me if suddenly the doctor's into dudes. Mm-hmm. That will bother me because it's like, oh, the doctor's heterosexual regardless. Like, I mean, I don't know. It just...
I agreed that I would prefer it that way.
Yeah.
However, you know, like, tastes change with each body, right? And who's to say that isn't sexual preferences as well, romantic preferences
as well? That's true. I just feel like that would be a bolder choice. I also would be disappointed
if it was the doctor's perpetually more or less heterosexual.
Or the doctor is perpetually falling in love with her companions.
God, I can do without romance in Doctor Who, period.
Right.
Well, I don't think, like I say, none of us watched that last season of Capaldi, which I understand is pretty good, and I don't think that was there. One hopes the new showrunner maybe gets away from that. Because like I said, Rose, it was novel. It was different. And I think that they've fallen into that rut of a romantic relationship with the doctor being part of what the new companions have is not as interesting.
And Rose was Russell Davies still, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. See, Russell Davies actually could write some things.
Yeah.
Moffat did not seem to have any comprehension of women. As far as I could tell.
But, yeah. I mean, the other thing is you start with Rose, and she has a romantic relationship with the doctor. Then you move on to, I'm forgetting his second companion with the new series. but she's kind of got a torch for Doctor.
The chick, hang on, I'll get her name.
She had a torch for the Doctor, but he did not carry a torch for her. And then you move on to Donna. And they're, like, not interested in each other at all.
Right. I liked Donna.
I liked Donna.
Martha Jones.
Martha Jones, right.
Yeah.
So, Donna kept him in check.
Donna was great.
Yeah, Donna was great.
So, you know, that was a decent progression in that they started with something that was unusual and then they moved back to a companion that's just a companion. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with this one. So we've got the first two episodes, of which Bob have seen them, and Nick and Molly, you've seen the first. So, first off, what are our impressions of Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor?
Well, she's certainly the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's certainly still Doctor Who.
Yep. I don't have any problem with that.
If you don't like Doctor Who, you're not going to like this show, because it's still Doctor Who.
Right.
If you liked Doctor Who before... and you're not a sexist, you'll probably still like Doctor Who.
Yeah, she's got a good... She did that usual... the usual fairly manic energy right after regeneration of like, oh my God, a new body. What is this? Look at my hands. Look at my body. Oh, I'm a woman now. Oh, that's exciting. You know, kind of like Robin Williams-y energy.
Do we need to warn for spoilers?
Oh, obviously. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to hear about it. Tune in later.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
First episode's free to watch online.
Yep. Well, I had questions which I think are probably answerable, like how did she fall all that way down and through a train roof and not die? But of course, she's regenerating, so she just put herself back together.
She's more energy than...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, that was the literal cliffhanger at the end of the season was, cool, new female doctor plummeting to death. You know, how is she going to get out of this? Well, the answer was she didn't. She just plummeted.
The woman who fell to earth.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
And not a Bowie song in the whole goddamn episode. Right.
What were they thinking?
One of the moments that I really liked, and I hope they do more with this, is was at the very end of the episode when the Doctor has set off the DNA bombs in the villain.
Yeah.
And the villain is standing there starting to deal a quest, and the human who he's trying to capture whacks him. And knocks him off the
crane. Kicks him off the crane.
And he uses his teleporter and obviously teleports to some other place.
No, the doctor puts the teleporter on him to save him, I think.
Maybe she throws it to him or something. I can't recall precisely. But then she scolds the guy. You had no right to do that. Which I thought was interesting. It's a little bit of characterization that they could have skipped. And they didn't, you know. They're like, nope. She has the same sort of moral compass that this guy was defeated. He was no longer a threat.
Right.
You had no business shoving him off this crane.
Sure.
You know.
I liked that the doctor automatically assumed that the two aliens are fighting, because it's a very Doctor assumption to make.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, two aliens, both on Earth, both causing havoc in pretty much the same place at the same time. Ah, they're fighting. Better figure that out. I don't even have to think about it anymore. I got right. it, you know?
And the first assumption was wrong.
Yeah, and yeah. her like rash choice and then being like, cool, run with it. I'm the Doctor. I know all the things. So let's just run with my idea. And that causing it to be more of a problem mm-hmm. was very on theme.
I didn't super like... Well, first of all, I just want to say, like, I really don't like the new Sonic Screwdriver design, and I realize it's purely, like, an aesthetic thing, and that's going to be subjective, and people can like it, and people can not like it, but I think it's kind of weird that, like, the first time the Doctor is a woman, they made a Sonic Screwdriver that looks like a fucking sex toy. Like, and it and I don't like how it came about in the story, which is... She lost her sonic screwdriver, so she just slapped one together in a garage with a little bit of alien technology that just happened to have all the right parts to make a sonic.
Yeah.
Like, it is what I don't like about Doctor Who. It's not science fiction. It's not even science fantasy in the same way that Star Wars is. It is, like, the worst technobabble of Star Trek, where it's like, how do we solve the problem? We invent a thing to solve the problem with techno words. Done and done. Yep. Like, that's not writing. That's plot convenience. And whatever. Like, it didn't ruin it for me. It's just, you know, like, it's the thing I don't like about Doctor Who.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, I felt like that was an attempt to show the Doctor having certain abilities... to make shit happen on her own.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
See that.
I need this thing, and I have the skills to actually make this thing happen.
Yeah.
Kind of like Domino in Deadpool, where she just sort of has like a luck kind of situation because she's the Doctor.
Well, and it's brains, too.
It's brains. Yeah, it's not innate.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like, it's also opportunity. I mean, she's not...
Sure.
She couldn't have done it without the stuff she just happened to find,
oh,
right?
Oh, no. If that scene had happened in a bakery, it would be a blintz. She'd be waving a blintz around.
Yeah.
It would, you know,
Sonic Blintz. But does she... I mean, like...
Sonic Blintz. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Does she put a little bit of her Time Lordy essence into it, or like
I kind of feel like some of that Time Lordy essence has to, because the sonic screwdriver does. I mean, it's the Doctor's tool.
It's just a door handle.
Yeah,
it's more than a door. Yeah, the sonic screwdriver is when the Doctor can't make something happen, sonic screwdriver makes it happen.
It's a magic wand.
Yeah,
it's a magic wand that it only comes out when magic wands are needed. Mm-hmm. And there's that whole thing about what is it? It doesn't work on wood.
Right.
Is that so? It's a magic wand with a foible that makes it like plot convenient for troubles.
Before Green Lantern, the original Green Lantern, or after?
I don't know.
Because his weakness wasn't the color yellow. It was also the Green Lantern did not work on wood.
So
I mean
I like Jodie Whittaker a lot.
Yeah. Yes.
I thought that she really nailed the Doctor pretty much from the get-go. And I, you know, this is getting a little into episode 2 as go well.
Ahead. Yeah, that's okay. Fine. We don't mind.
I think that the body of the episode was stronger than the conclusion.
Yes.
And I honestly think that's a problem with Doctor Who a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think the second episode was the same way, mm-hmm. where the body of the episode, right up basically to the point that we get the TARDIS, frankly,
right.
was solid.
Right.
You know, and then it kind of lost it a little bit. And it feels like they're trying to build... especially when we see the Doctor see the TARDIS, there was something about that moment that before the TARDIS shows up, where we see the Doctor actually despair that felt manufactured,
because, uncharacteristic,
because that's not the Doctor, and maybe that's the point. Maybe the point is this is something that we're going to see in the Doctor this season that is uncharacteristic, that is something the Doctor has to deal with. But if it's not,
right,
it was disappointing to me.
Yeah.
Doctor Who's never had a problem with a good hook or a good plot hook, a good horror hook. a good gimmick for an episode. Yeah. Like, that's never really been a problem. I mean, there's bad ones, obviously, too, but, like, there's a reason Doctor Who has a bunch of really fucking cool, iconic villains that are very horror-centric in my mind, are the ones that stick out. Like, you know, kids with gas masks, Are You My Mommy?
Yeah.
Or, shit, I just thought of one and I forgot.
There's the ones with the big smiles.
Right, there's...
And,
there's,
like, yeah.
And then there's the silence, which are...
The silence, horrible. Which are good, yeah. Terrifying.
And not yeah. necessarily just villains, but problems.
Right.
Good, mm-hmm. interesting problems for the Doctor to solve, there's which are always an enemy. There's the Venetian vampires one. But then, like, how those get beaten, how the day gets saved, like, endings of... Mm-hmm. Never, at least for the Monster of the Week stuff, the endings are never really strong.
Sometimes, I mean, I think they've been okay sometimes.
Yeah,
but sure. I think that is the area where the Doctor, where Doctor Who can fall flat.
Yeah.
So
I was
all I have to do is hope enough through my sonic screwdriver yeah. and say an inspirational speech.
If only everybody just loved each other.
I was willing to give the first episode a break because you're setting a new world up, and your villain always needs to be kind of soft. And then in the second episode, I just thought the villain was equally weak or weaker. And then there was no payoff at the end. Mm. It's not like the Doctor did something innovative and mm-hmm. suddenly managed to get the TARDIS back. TARDIS just decided to show the fuck up.
Right.
I know. And that was really disappointing. Because the basic structure of the episode is the Doctor and the companions getting to know each other.
Right.
And that's what the episode was there for. And there are these other characters that I actually kind of hope we see again.
Well, we won't see one of them.
No. I'm talking about the second episode.
Oh, okay.
Because the second episode really is the Doctor and these three people who are now
the companions.
Together in space.
Okay.
Kind of figuring each other out.
They all three of them are going to be the companions.
Very yeah. clearly, at least okay. for a while.
Great. Yep. Mourning a loss, like yeah. right off the bat.
First yeah. woman doctor, first Polly doctor.
Yeah. And I was disappointed with that loss, too, because from the previews, I was just like, oh, look, it's the three companions and a fourth person who's probably going to die because they're not a companion.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was so telegraphed. I was just like, well, she's dead.
That's yeah. disappointing. Yeah. That's like reading the previews in comics, man. It's like you look at a cover art and you're like, oh, it's missing Wolverine.
Yeah,
oh, shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's worth noting that this episode was the highest
yeah.
rated premiere of a Doctor ever.
Yeah.
It was the second highest rated episode of Doctor Who ever. The most highest rated one was Matt Smith's last appearance mm. when Peter Capaldi took not when Peter Capaldi took over, but like that last yeah. Matt Smith one.
Yeah,
right.
And it has the highest consolidated ratings since yeah that time of the Doctor. So like mm-hmm. it's really amazing. It's got 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's really impressive considering the potential for sexist troll hate.
Yeah.
On sites like Rotten Tomatoes,
done a lot to try and reduce that. But
sure,
even so.
But even people who just, how about this? Even people who maybe don't realize that their anger or their misgivings are sexist because it's internalized misogyny, sure. who are just like, holding her to a higher standard or just in general, just crossing their arms and going, you know, like it's impressive that with all that and considering the writing wasn't very great, like it wasn't a super great episode, but it still got really good viewership. Yeah, so,
go ahead.
It was not a knock the ball out of the park episode. Yeah. It was a Doctor Who, it was an introduction to the new Doctor episode.
And I don't even think it was like the best of those, honestly. I just think it's really impressive that it got these ratings. And I think that really shows that like this, having a woman doctor is something people have been wanting and are willing to show up for.
No doubt.
And that inclusion and diversity can still, you know, not just be like something that makes a company feel good about themselves, but actually like brings in the money, which is good.
I mean, I have to say that my biggest hope is when Jodie Whittaker retires, which she will. She'll do somewhere between 2 and 5 seasons probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My real hope is the next Doctor is also a woman, that they don't just flip back to a woman.
Woman of color, please.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Woman of color would be great.
Or Idris Elba.
Either a person of color.
Yes.
A person of color is what I want.
Yep. But because Because I think the biggest thing is you've made the Doctor, you've got the Doctor played by a woman. It's very easy to say that Time Lords, you know, they are gender fluid, really. Mm-hmm. You know, when they regenerate, they can regenerate as a man or as a woman. You don't know. unless you're Romana and she could control her regenerations. But anyway, that's right. Never mind. But the really important thing is the Doctor has been a man up until now.
Right. Yeah.
And if you make the Doctor a woman once and then go straight back to making it a guy again.
Mm-hmm. Especially a white guy.
It becomes nothing more than gimmick casting.
Right. Yeah.
No matter how well Jodie Whittaker does in the role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to do, but that's kind of my hope.
I read a thing, and this is... So, the politics of Doctor Who that I feel like the majority of Americans aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
When the first new Doctor...
Eccleston.
When he showed up, it was a big deal because of his accent and his background.
Yeah.
Right. It was the first time someone from that group had been the Doctor.
Which is why Rose saying, are you from the North? It was like such a funny joke. Like, yeah.
And a Scottish Doctor. Like that was somewhat of a big deal, I guess.
Yep.
And so apparently everyone in this episode of Doctor Who, even the people that didn't have the Sheffield country accent, all had lower class accents.
Right. Well,
which is a big deal.
I've been to Sheffield. I have a friend, Giovanna, who lived in Sheffield for many years, and I've got friends there now. And so that aspect of having the Doctor wandering about Sheffield was very subversive and very funny.
Really? I
mean, Sheffield's the Pittsburgh of
England. I didn't think about that.
It's a steel town. It's mining.
Which is why the Doctor working on using Sheffield steel
to build her
sonic screwdriver was significant.
Yeah.
So
probably a bunch of people watching going, oh!
It's like saying Detroit.
Yeah, well, I mean, the worst criticism I saw about the show was that the train was running on time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's not London, and it's not posh, and so that's a mm-hmm. different aspect of mm-hmm. it, too.
Apparently, that's a political statement of sorts for Doctor Who.
That's great.
And something that I think, I mean, I was totally oblivious to. Like, I'm not really super up on my regional accents of England or Britain. Yeah.
Right. If you can ever get to Sheffield, that's where they filmed The Princess Bride in the Peak District, just to the mm-hmm. west of it. And so there's a lot of cool stuff up in Sheffield.
A lot of grass.
Yep. So before we move on to five questions. You know, the only other thing that I think we should address, talked around a little bit, the new companions.
Yep.
Which is an interesting group that they've put together. They are accidental companions. They did not choose to join the Doctor.
Which is a little weird to me because, like, they didn't choose, like, all the other companions that I've seen, it's been not just a choice, but, like, almost like a burning desire.
Yeah, no.
And so it's kind of weird that they sort of got kidnapped.
Back in the 70s.
That's a classic, Doctor.
Okay. Yeah.
And they didn't get kidnapped. It was an accident.
Right.
I know, but like it still feels like in the modern era, it's been more of a like, oh my God, I really want to do this. Please, please, can I go with you?
Yep.
And now it's just sort of a, ugh.
Like I say, that harkens way back to classic Doctor Who, where there were a lot of times where a companion ended up there by accident.
Yep.
And that is definitely what happened with these three. Okay. It gets acknowledged really rapidly in episode 2.
Okay.
The Doctor is like, this is not what was supposed to happen. This is my fault. I'm going to get you home.
Cool.
So, I mean, that is her focus.
Yep.
Is get these people home.
Yep.
They are not supposed to be here. I screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I thought that was good, but it also is a bridge to classic Doctor Who in that there are
It's also funny, notice when you watch the episode, the gender distribution of the castaways on the ships that pick them up. It's just kind of funny.
Right.
What is it?
It's the two men end up on a ship piloted by a woman, and the two women ended up on a ship piloted by a man.
Oh,
so it's just funny that they distributed that way. I don't know that it had terrible relevance, but it was funny.
Yeah,
So anyway, with that... I'm going to say, yeah, it really depends on... I mean, if you're into Doctor Who, this is Doctor Who.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
No. And I got to give them props for finally breaking that gender barrier.
Yep.
About time.
And I think it's fair and completely reasonable to say that if you didn't like this doctor, you're a sexist. That's it. Others do it. No options.
Just like if you didn't like Capaldi, you're ageist.
Yeah. I don't have anything... I don't have any problems
or
with the doctor at all.
Yeah.
I want to say, like, I've outgrown Doctor Who.
Yeah.
That sounds like a judgmental statement on anyone that likes Doctor Who. My tastes have changed away from it as a show.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like there's just so much stuff to watch that I enjoy the whole way through. That's making myself sit through something because I want to love it again is, I don't have the time.
Well, Doctor Who has always been a family show with kids in mind. Not necessarily aimed exclusively at kids, but certainly with kids as the emphasis.
Yep.
We watch a shit ton of cartoons.
That's never bothered me. That's honestly
I've seen
never...
those cartoons, but a lot of them aren't necessarily aimed at kids.
That's never bothered me. It's just, the thing is, I'm not like bored by the plots or thinking that it's like, it's not edgy enough or anything like that. It's more just that I want it to be good and then it isn't good enough
that's
to hold my
different.
Interest.
Yeah,
and so
an issue of quality.
My time is worth more and there's so much TV these days. Like we are in a golden age of nerd television.
That
like,
is true.
Who would have thought that there'd be so many comic book television shows that I couldn't keep up? Like it's astonishing.
Yeah. It is true and it's difficult.
I call them super operas. They're soap operas with super
for sure.
Yeah,
anything
I like
on
that.
The CW, big time.
Yeah.
Doctor Who is like one of the first times I've kind of like left a fandom ever maybe
yeah
I mean I don't want to say I've left the fandom but I don't go out of my and I don't go out of my way to watch a lot of stuff honestly but it is harder for me to watch it. I don't get cable
right
so it's not on Netflix or Hulu until you know a couple of seasons later. And that is usually what gets me to watch things.
I've heard that there are people who use alternate methods to access some of these things, and that people who were interested could probably find those things.
Well, I've heard that too, but the thing is, that's effort.
That would be effort,
And that's kind of where I'm at. Also, my kids were super into Doctor Who for a while, and they're not as much anymore.
Yeah. Yep.
And if they were still into it, I'd probably still be watching it.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got to get on to five questions.
Five questions!
Bob, the way this works these days, you get to ask us five questions, especially since we've already asked you the five questions that were the last set of five questions we had.
Okay.
So why don't we start with your question number one?
Alrighty. Which is your least favorite Doctor Who companion, and why?
Molly and I probably have the same answer.
So, I honestly, like, I'm so tied between Rose and Clara that I honestly don't know if I can pick one because I feel like they both started out strong and then just ended garbage. So I would have to flip a coin.
Okay.
But I'm gonna say those two are tied for me.
I found Rose annoying. As a character, I like Billy Piper just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like a Doctor Companion romance typically, and I just don't think Doctor Who is a show that needs a lot of romance. Or the romance between Amy Pond and her dude
Arthur Darvill,
was just fine. I had no problem with that. The Doctor, I don't. I mean, and him and River Song, I was fine with that too. So.
Those were more because those are mature relationships,
right?
Okay. Rather than kind of a crush.
I just hate Rose. I just really it was just so bad.
I also hate Rose, but Clara.
I like the stories Rose was in.
And Rose was a little tougher.
Yeah.
And Clara was a little like more just like the girl at the party that I wish would stop talking to me.
You know, I'm going to go back to classic Doctor Who.
Yep.
I think, honestly, the reason I hated Colin Baker so much is I hated Perry. She was this whiny American, incompetent. She was incapable of doing anything except screaming and freaking out. And it was just like, I want Doctor Who companions to be capable.
Mm.
And she was not. She was just useless.
Yeah.
So Perry would be the one. And it's a close call because Adric was obnoxious.
Thank you.
I was going with Adric.
I cheered when he died.
I feel like Perry was meant to be like a an insult to Americans when I saw her as a companion. Like, I was like, oh, this is what you think of us.
Right.
Is kind of what I kind of.
Which is fine for one episode, but she was on for way more than that.
Two doctors.
Yeah.
And then Tegan had a voice that could cut glass. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still like Tegan.
So. I prefer Sarah.
All right. So.
All right. Question that actually two. Works.
I know.
Yeah.
The Kavanaugh hearings flipped over the rock on American cultural dysfunctions such as male entitlement and pervasive institutional sexual abuse. What can we as individuals most effectively do to address the problems brought to light?
Dude.
Vote Democrat. Is one answer.
I just thought I'd flip it around.
No.
Yeah. Call out the behavior when you see it in your friends. And maybe that doesn't apply to a lot of us older adults, but I know we have listeners who are younger. And honestly, if you see your friends acting this way, fucking call it out. Like, that is the thing that's going to stop this the most often. If Kavanaugh hadn't had a bunch of goddamn fucking frat boy bros who had his back and high-fived him and did that whole Renata alumni and, like, jokes about that kind of shit. Like, that shit's not funny. Call it out. And maybe, you know, if you're like, oh, well, then I'll be a social pariah, I guess then you're siding with the oppressors. So that's the thing.
Yeah, I
am. Choose who you associate with.
Yep.
As a parent, I mean, this is a recent example. You know, my son was at work and he was having a problem with a coworker. And to be fair, what she did was completely unacceptable. You know, but he gets home and he was like, you know, she was just being a royal bitch. And I was like, all right. Stop right there.
Yeah.
You are not wrong that she was behaving improperly, but don't use those terms.
Find another way to say it.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, stop with the sexist language. You can still say she was being a pain in the ass.
Yep. She was being fucking stupid. You know, she was being unreasonable.
Yeah, a jerk. Yeah. Fine. Just non-gendered.
So, I mean, as a parent, those are some of the things that if you are a parent, those are some of the things you can do. It's not so much about saying to the kid, vote Democrat or vote liberal or what you say there. It's teaching them the lessons on how to think that way and the damage that thinking a different way can do to other individuals.
Hold people accountable. Whether that's voting, whether that's calling out people in your social circle, whether that's cutting off ties and not associating with those kinds of people. Hold people accountable for bad behavior.
Fucking girls for points isn't a joke. Like, just that's just, like, that whole thing. Like, the whole concept of, like, oh, if you can get her, she's worth this many points. And if you can do that, she's worth this many points or whatever. Those games that dudes play in high school. Yeah. It's just, it's gross.
And I would add for my answer, since I asked the question, would be aware of your privilege. If you're listening to a podcast, you have privilege because you have something with which to listen to a podcast and other people don't. Mm-hmm. Whatever your privilege is, and as a white male, I have a lot, try to be aware of it. Try to know what you leverage that gets you through life better than other people and don't take it for granted.
Maybe not better, but easier. That's the thing. A lot of people will just get frustrated with the idea of privilege because they think that means that their life is better.
Yeah.
It's just a plus one on some roles.
Right. Yep.
That doesn't mean you can't roll poorly.
I think I typically also, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I keep mentioning it. What people like Bob and Nick and myself, white, cisgendered, straight males can do is amplify marginalized voices.
Yep.
So.
And somebody who's been teaching me a lot about that is Hal Bichel. She does a really good job of that. Yeah. And she's been showing me the way that works. So
the head of the Twin Cities Social Justice Illuminati.
Pretty much, yeah.
Also Gregory Parks.
Yeah.
Two really good voices for that kind of thing. All right, question number three.
Question number three. What is your favorite of the 13 doctors and why?
Tom Baker.
Ah, very good.
But why?
A lot of it's sentimental. I mean, he is the most iconic without just stapling vegetation to wardrobe of the doctors in appearance, I feel. Obviously, the scarf, the hat, the long trench coat, like, it's great. But I have, like, some of my first memories of, like, nerdy stuff as a little kid was like sitting on my dad's lap and watching Doctor Who on PBS. Mm-hmm. And like my mom is like, yeah, you used to walk around the house going like da da hoo, and like humming the theme song and shit when I was a little kid. So a lot of it's sentimental. Without, you never forget your first doctor.
Hmm. That's fair. Yeah.
How about you?
You know, it's tough. Tom Baker was my first doctor. I think there is much about Tom Baker that really informs every portrayal of the Doctor, especially on the new series.
Yep.
But I think I like... I'm really fond of David Tennant. I know a lot of people are like weepy-eyed David Tennant.
No,
I fucking loved him. I thought he was just... Mm-hmm. He brought so much emotion and depth to the Doctor. And for all that all these other people informed, you know, were informed by Tom Baker, I feel like David Tennant established the template for the new series. So I'm going to go with David Tennant. I'm also going to say that I feel it's way too early to pass judgment on Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah.
David Tennant was my first doctor, and, you know, you never forget your first doctor, as it were. But, like, I, in hindsight, I never thought I would say this when he started, but Matt Smith is my favorite. Hmm. I think that he had a really brilliant combination of ridiculous silliness, and then when it mattered, he had some of the most incredible... he was an angry doctor when it got at times, and it was a surprising anger. It wasn't Christopher Eccleston's, like, war veteran anger. It was, like, an anger... Like, the anger of a gentleman. That's what it means. The anger you should really fear. Mm-hmm. When the silly, funny guy who's, like, trying to solve everything, when he gets mad, you should fucking run. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that. I really liked Matt Smith.
Now, don't piss off a clown.
Exactly. Kind of, but for real, though. Like the three things all wise men should fear, you know, the anger of a gentleman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And mine was Tom Baker because I got to meet him in 1987.
Oh, that's great.
So there.
Yeah, there.
Baker.
My friend Valerie, who was on the show, she kept the signed program that he
had. Oh, wow. Nick and Tom Baker are the same height. So when I knit him his Doctor Who scarf, it is the length that the Tom Baker scarf is, which means it is almost impossible
He's
to wear.
He's got an inch on me. At his prime, he has an inch on me now.
But, you know, that scarf hung almost to his knees after being wrapped around. So, like, that scarf is fucking long.
It's dope. I love it.
All right, question number four.
According to a recent UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC climate report, we are near or past the point of no return on climate change.
Yeah.
What is the most effective thing we as individuals can address climate change?
Vote Democrat.
No, but for real, I was going to say vote. I think it's super important. That is our puppy barking, by the way. We're at the Glover household.
As mentioned in the last episode.
So I will give that as an answer. And if she keeps barking, I will take her out while we answer the rest of them.
Well, we only have a couple.
One more.
Get a vasectomy. Or not have kids. If each person consumes all the resources they consume and adds all the pollutants they add, no matter how, unless you're like wearing a hair shirt and living in a cabin, your mere existence is going to have a negative impact on the planet. The best thing you can do is not bring in another life that's going to tax the planet's resources. If 100,000 people who were gonna have kids decided to not have kids, like, that would be a big fucking deal. That would be a huge impact on the environment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. That gets into some ethically dubious shit about, like, controlling population levels and sterilizing people and all that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking, like, voluntarily consider sterilization. If you need a kid, adopt. Okay. Like, there are kids out there. There's no shortage of kids in the world.
Fresh new batch from South America. Oh,
right? They're all over the place. Get a kid. Just, like, maybe don't have a kid.
I would say, and I mean, that's fair. I've already got children, so I can't suggest that. I would say what I would suggest is, number one, drive a fuel-efficient vehicle. You know, if you're driving a pickup truck and you don't need to, you got to stop. And number two, you should find ways to reduce your waste by at least one bag of garbage a week. If everybody did that, it would make a huge difference in terms of the amount of new product that's being created, the amount of the amount of energy that's being consumed that way. And I mean, it's not enough.
Yep.
It's not enough.
No.
What has to change has to be on a macro level. Everything we do on a micro level is absolutely important. But if we aren't switching away from fossil fuels and, you know, if we don't stop consuming coal at the rate we're consuming it, if we don't stop resisting switching to wind and hydro and solar for most of our power needs, there isn't a lot any of us can do. And that's, it's like, I
kind of the point of the report.
I hate to make it about politics, but the fact is, there is one party in this country that is basically saying, fuck it, we're not going to do shit about global warming. We're just going to pretend that there's nothing that can be done. And one party that's trying to do something, and it's not adequate, it's not enough.
Right.
But if you make it politically damaging to be anti-climate yep. change, then both parties will work on it. And that's actually what we need.
I disagree.
I
think they'll do some. They'll do just enough to convince people to vote for them. But ultimately, unless money and politics change, they're all bought by corporate interest to some degree or another, and that is where the majority of the pollution is coming from. The biggest problems are from not contribution of people, but of contribution of by irresponsible businesses that are saving money.
Question five.
I'll just give my answer. Is destroy capitalism.
Yeah, right. I mean, really. No, that's ultimately you.
Eat the rich.
Those three words.
Cannot solve the problem without some sort of different economic system than what we're using now. Absolutely.
Yep. All right. And finally, number five, what is the dumbest Doctor Who villain and why?
And there are so many.
There's so many to
choose
from.
I have an answer already because this is the one I was the most excited about. Cassandra. The moisturize me, the big piece skin that's supposedly the last pure human on Earth or that exists, and like she needs to be moisturized, and like it, she's played by the actress who plays Rose.
Right.
And voiced by someone else or whatever, and like it's just weird. So it's like kind of Rose's face. Like, you know, I don't know. It was a really strange. I just thought that because, and everyone thought it was, I just thought it was gross and weird. And
I thought it was Kathleen Hellman from Brazil. Just,
right? Yeah, totally.
Same character. Just
taken to the extreme.
Yeah, so that's mine.
Yeah.
Go
for it.
I guess I think the Slitheen are pretty dumb. Mm-hmm. The whole shove into the body of fat people and fart a lot.
Oh, yeah.
No, the Slitheen.
Autons, the mannequins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just in their various incarnations over the years. Like I mean, it's just, it started as what can we do in our special effects budget that would be a villain or a monster? Oh, let's just, you know, put some string on some mannequins and put clothes on them and they kill people. But, like, they're still doing it. they're still doing it now. It's like, you don't, you're not still shooting in a quarry. like, why are you still using these mannequins? They're not scary at all. Yeah, they're not scary when it's Christmas either. Like, you don't, that doesn't make it suddenly scary again. Yeah, I think it's not cute anymore. It's just cheap.
What do you think, Bob? What's yours?
The adipose.
Adipose.
Kind of insulting, right?
Kind of fat phobic.
Yeah.
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 Oh,
yeah.
It's like, it's the worst thing you can be.
It's fat.
I had a coworker that had a little adipose, like, pop figure or whatever on her desk. And she wasn't, like, a slender lady by any means or whatever. But another coworker who is a very, very insensitive and not aware person came over and was asking her about it. And she's like, but you know what it is, though, right? And she's like, yeah, it's from Doctor Who. He goes, yeah, but, like, you know what adipose is? Like, adipose fat? And she's like, yeah, I know what it is, man. And he's like, because, like, you have it on your desk. And it was just like, dude,
yeah.
Like, go sit down.
Yeah.
You are being an asshole.
Yeah, yeah. So, hooray, Doctor Who.
There you go. Those are our five questions. Thank you, Bob, for being here. Thanks, for talking with us about Doctor Who. I'm my hope is Jodie Whittaker keeps killing it as the Doctor. I think that's great. I think it's good for the series. If you enjoyed this episode, I'm going to remind you, you can support us on Patreon. We recently posted a brand new Patreon exclusive episode for those folks listening to us, in which we tried to get a Ouija board to work.
How did we do?
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. We tried hard.
We did
all kinds of shit.
Did you put up an antenna?
We can't tell you.
You might have put up an antenna.
We can't tell because you got to listen to the Patreon episode. So support us on Patreon. We're getting pretty close to our $150 support goal, which will allow us to upgrade our website. And we're already using right now some of that new equipment that we have been able to purchase thanks to your support. So we really appreciate your listening. We are going to be back next week with another episode because that's all we do. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.
Bye.
We made it all the way through that episode and didn't once talk about what she was wearing. What's wrong with us?
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God.